reading from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 17 through 22 and 33 through 34. Now, in the following instructions, I do not commend you, because when you come together, is it not for the better, but for the worse? For to begin with, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and to some extent I believe it. Indeed, there have to be factions among you, for only so will it be become clear to you among you are genuine. When you come to the Lord's together, is it not really to eat the Lord's supper? For when the time comes to eat, each of you goes ahead with your own supper, one goes hungry, and another becomes drunk. What? Do you not have homes to eat and drink in? Or do you show contempt for the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What should I say to you? Should I commend you? In this matter, I do not commend you. So then, my brothers and sisters, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. If you are hungry, eat at home, so that when you come together, it will not be for your condemnation. About the others, I will give you instructions when I come. This is the word of the Lord.
John Adams died 195 years ago today, on July the 4th, 1826, 50 years to the day after the signing of our nation's Declaration of Independence. He was a remarkable statesman and visionary to see so much possibility in the American enterprise. Statesman for his keen ability to reconcile the many disparate and even opposing convictions as to best ways to fulfill that vision. Virtually all of his sentiments regarding this enormously tumultuous endeavor of birthing a nation found their way into letters between John and his wife, Abigail. Over 1,000 such letters were exchanged between them. In one of these letters, written in 1775, John Adams wrote these words to his wife: America is a great, unwieldy body. I need to pause here and ask, and I think you'll appreciate the irony, could he possibly have imagined how well that would describe the very same country 2.5 centuries later? Or maybe we have no idea precisely what he and his contemporaries were facing then in the way of challenges to the ideal of a good society becoming realized. America is a great, unwieldy body, he wrote to Abigail. Its progress must be slow. It is like a large fleet sailing under convoy. The fleetest sailors must wait for the dullest and slowest. When I consider John Adams' description of America as a great unwieldy body, I'm always reminded of another great unwieldy body, the young and restless church at Corinth, to which Paul wrote the letter from which Karen read just now. The subject is how to be considerate of others at the Lord's table. Apparently, some were arriving for the worship gathering earlier than others, and eager to get started, they proceeded to share the sacrament along with a fellowship meal that was commonly connected to the Lord's Supper. By the time others had arrived, the deviled eggs were all gone. The green bean casserole was reduced to the crust around the edges of the Pyrex dish. And all that was left of the crumb cake were the crumbs. But the more serious matter, the greatest offense, was that the Eucharistic meal had also already been shared and put away. Paul's instruction to the church to rectify this problem was breathtakingly obvious. And at the end of it, he summarizes it in four words. Wait for one another. His simple admonition is an ethical code for the Lord's table. Today we'll practice it. But also for life beyond sacramental gatherings, wait for one another. It works the same in kindergarten and in Congress, in marriage, and in our various ministries in the church and community, with siblings and with soccer mates, at the farmer's market, and definitely on the freeway. Wait for one another. It works in seeking understanding beyond other people's narrow attitudes and easy platitudes as we perceive them, and also beyond our own. It works to lift from our eyes that awful lens of stereotype and suspicion that shrinks others in our view, even as it shrinks our own humanity in looking through them in such ways. Wait for one another. Every month, in partaking of the Lord's table together, we get to practice in a very literal way that ethical code of waiting for one another. And it will certainly be true today with all the patient crisscrossing and discernment that we're doing as we share the sacrament. The first ones to come forward will be waited for by those who come after. And those of you who have come first will then wait, once returning to your seats, for those who follow. Everyone waits for somebody. And everyone is waited upon by somebody. Holy Communion makes us more conscious of both of these things, that we wait for others and that others wait for us. I think of it as a practice for the way we live the rest of our lives, both in Christian community and in our public lives in the world. On the day we mark the anniversary of the signing by the Second Continental Congress of the Declaration of Independence, in this room, we also mark something else. As followers of Jesus, we mark our declaration of dependence. To borrow a phrase from our own bishop, Robert Schnese, dependence on God and on one another. For once we grow wise enough to see it, the waiting we do for each other is not merely a matter of being nice toward others who are not quite as together as we are. The waiting is grounded in an understanding that, contrary to our more naive or arrogant presumptions, tolerance always goes in two directions. Those who are slower than I am, different somehow, aligned more to the left or to the right in their worldview, darker skinned, lighter skinned, those I wait for, put up with, tolerate, accommodate in attitudes or in church work or in public policy. All of these are in one way or another accommodating me as well. In a double bind from which there is no escaping, I depend on others as much as others depend on me. In John Adams' metaphorical convoy with ships fast and ships that are slow, that double bind of mutual dependence is evident. The fastest and fleetest ships would have had very few essential provisions on board. That's why they're so fast and fleet. Guess where those provisions that they will surely need are lodged? On the ships that are dull and slow, of course, which is why they're dull and slow. They're carrying the necessary cargo for the whole convoy, including the fast ships, so that together all can make it safely across the ocean intact. The slow ships can be grateful, of course, for the navigating skills of the swift that are out front, scouting the way. And the swift can be grateful that the slow carry their supper. Well, we're sharing the Lord's supper today, a ritual recalling of God's grace lavished upon the world through the life and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. I invite you to pay attention to two very obvious things. The fact that you're waiting on others part of the time, and that part of the time, others will be waiting on you. All of this will surely bring to our awareness just how much others depend on us to extend grace in their direction, and perhaps, no, surely, more importantly, how much we depend on others to extend grace toward us. Sometimes we call the bread and cup the means of grace, means or mechanism or a mediation of grace, the means by which, the avenue through which we see symbolically God's love and grace. The bread and the cup are not the only things that mediate that love and grace. Our opening call to worship suggested that each of us, in a sense, also do. Let us be bread. Let us be wine, love freely poured. The bread and cup mediate the grace of God, and then those who partake mediate the grace of God. In other words, the bread and cup are not the only means of grace in the room with us today. There's the bread, there's the cup, and then there's you. 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 Me. All the ships, all the speeds, swift and slow, all the necessary gifts for life together in Christ, in community, in a nation, in the world.